17th. And after about a couple of years later, this is from what I know, not from what I can remember, but after a couple of years later, my folks moved around the corner on 16th and Potrero, mm-hmm. right on the corner.
Okay. Now, tell me a little bit about, you know, the neighborhood or your childhood and what it was like.
Okay. The neighborhood at that time was considered...
You came over to the school. And
I went over to the school, I got there at the time they were taking pictures. I got my picture to take.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the highlight, that was my growing up life.
22nd and Bryant.
22nd and Bryant.
Okay, now you lived in a traditional home.
With three-story flat.
No, I mean, were your parents religious or were they traditional? Did they keep certain customs?
Okay, my parents came from Greece, and
they immigrated.
And my mom was one of these Sunday going church people. As far as real religious goes, not basically a religious person. Would you call it religious?
What about customs? Language? Did you speak Greek in high
school? Oh yeah, I spoke Greek. Yeah, matter of fact. I spoke Greek before I could speak English,
mm-hmm.
and that's because of the, my folks didn't know English that time very well. It was broken English, and it was easier for them to speak Greek, so it just followed. Mm-hmm.
What did your dad do? Well, I didn't make a living.
From what I can remember, he was a supervisor at that time in a basket weaving outfit that lived at work. He worked close by,
mm-hmm.
and they had sold out, and he had lost his job. And this was during the Depression, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a tough time during the Depression? Did your family, did you make it through?
Well, I would say no, as far as I know. It was tough for them, for the parents.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you're young, you know, what do you know?
Yeah.
Because they've always provided for us as far as food goes. I mean, I can remember days we went out into the mountains picking for dandelion greens, you know, for greens.
What
mountains?
What mountains?
Oh,
Twin Peaks and Russian Hill, you picked dandelion greens?
In lots in the neighborhood, you know,
right.
Go out and pick and that's all.
Right. Yeah, I know where that is.
And we were looking for mushrooms,
mm-hmm.
but growing up period was through the San Francisco
Boys. Through the San Francisco Boys, because we were in a lot of different crafts.
Yeah,
how long were you in there? I mean, roughly, were you in there for maybe 10 years?
Yeah, I got married when I was 22.
I see.
I became a life member. When you reach 21, you're eligible to be a life member after you've been a member for so many years.
I see. Do you have your membership card?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I just
mm-hmm. But you kind of, that was you, a lot of your growing up period was
Boys
Club and learning a lot of different things.
Through sports and crafts and mm-hmm. and the mechanics.
Right.
They had everything.
They had everything. Yeah.
They had everything.
Where is it located?
First of all, 21st in Alabama.
21st in Alabama.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So the Rotarians had their luncheons at the Palace Hotel. You guys got dressed up and went there every year. You remember doing that?
It was a once-a-year deal, right?
Right. It was a big deal.
Yeah. They were drafting at that time from him.
Mm-hmm. This was when you were out of high school?
No. I was young.
Very young.
Yeah, I was about 12 years
old. What high school did you graduate from?
Mission High.
I see.
Well, let's put it this way. I left Mission High my senior year.
Yeah.
I was 19 years old. I was the oldest person in school at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that to stay another year would be too embarrassing for me. This mm-hmm. is the way I figured. I thought.
Was that because you weren't able to keep up with the school?
I just couldn't make it. There's too many credits I had to make up.
Mm-hmm.
I had no problem. I got a job. Working with my dad in the same factory he worked with. Mm-hmm. My dad worked for a Crown, it was that time, a Western Crown Cork and Seal, but it became Crown Cork and Seal.
Mm-hmm. A factory.
It was a factory. We made caps for bottles, soda mm-hmm. caps.
How much did you make a week, do you remember?
I remember it was $33.90 a week.
Mm-hmm. And that was about what year?
That was 1940s.
48, okay.
Yeah.
1948. Right. So you lived here for 13 years or something like
yeah.
that?
I mm-hmm. moved.
What were your experiences about that job? Did you enjoy it, or was it a good job, or kind of like it? Spent a lot of time. You were very sports-minded.
Yeah,
like
I used to play semi-football.
In San Francisco?
San Francisco.
What team did you play with?
I played with what they call the Rainbow Cafe. Well, I played with the San Francisco Boys Club, which was mostly amateur at that time.
Uh-huh.
And
what position did you play?
Infield, outfield,
uh-huh.
and a little pitching.
Was it baseball, hardball?
Yeah, or both. Both. My youngest.
You had one of the top teams. What was the name of the team there? It was when you after you moved up to Ukiah? Or what? It was a boys club team, right?
No. This was when I lived.
It was a Masonite team. You played all up and down the Northern California.
Played throughout. Yeah.
Okay.
I had to move out of the home, move up to Ukiah. Mm-hmm. Red Valley. We had a ranch up there, 20-acre ranch. Lived there for 5 or 6 years, and there'd be another drastic change somewhere. Became a supervisor of Masonite or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quoting exactly. Mm-hmm. But, and then, let's say I met Jim Jones, mm-hmm. who made a drastic change in our life and brought us to our senses and, mm-hmm. and awareness of where we are today.
When did you get married?
We got married in 1948.
Uh-huh. And she was living in San Francisco, too?
Yeah, she lived
from
there.
I see. And so you, I see. And then you moved up. About what year did you move up to
April. Around the first of April, 1960.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved to
Red Valley. Why did you move out of San Francisco? What was the deal? You had your own business.
For 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And after that year, I sold it. Because we were up there alone. We didn't know anybody that time.
Did you make very many friends while you were up there, or just kind of live by yourself?
No, we kind of lived by ourselves, but we met people around, you know, neighbors that we became acquainted with,
mm-hmm.
as far as what you call close friends. You know.
Did you miss the city at all when you were up there?
No, surprisingly, Dick, we didn't.
Okay.
And
went to Masonite about what year?
Let's
see. Masonite for 13 years.
Yeah.
Okay, what kind of work did you do generally?
Okay, I started out as a laborer, just mm-hmm. sweeping floors and doing
right.
basic cleanup work. And I worked at that for probably pavement breakers, cement finishing.
Yeah.
This
mm-hmm.
sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that job,
being a leaderman.
Responsible for jobs now. With,
yeah.
You know, just being a leaderman with a group
uh-huh.
of people, about 5 or 6 people.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I had it for about maybe 5 or 6 months. And my foreman at that time got a promotion
yeah.
after about 5 or 6 months. And that gap was empty. So I jumped right into his job. They asked me, I was going to turn it down because I was new there. I was only there about a year and a half. And there were people that I was instructing that were there, you know, 4, 5, 6 years. But yeah, I never even heard about him.
You never heard about him. He was there. He had his church there, but you didn't hear about him.
Okay, the way we met Jim Jones was...
My wife and a friend reading Eddie Casey.
And she was a salesman selling Avon.
Yeah.
She came over the house, and Edie was reading Edgar Casey book, and she had it on the coffee table when the Avon lady came in. And she says, "Oh, you're reading Edgar Casey?" She said, "Yeah." She says, "There's a club that meets every Sunday afternoon for about 3 or 4 hours and study on Casey." So we got roped into going to a Sunday afternoon study on Casey.
Right.
And through that, someone mentioned that there was a, that Jim Jones was living in the valley, down right down the road on East Road, and that he claimed that he was a prophet, that he can do healing. See, Casey was a sleeping prophet, right?
I remember.
Okay, Jim Jones, not a sleeping prophet, he's alive. So, at that time, it was a big thing, you know. So I says, "Okay, let's go." So we all made arrangements to go. And the reason, the way we made the arrangements was one of the members, matter of fact, there were two members that worked for me, and I set it up with them to go to the meeting. So we had it set up for that Sunday, it was on Sunday. So none of the members showed up. My wife said, "I'm not going, not if they don't go, I don't want to go." So I said, "Okay, we won't go." They all done their own thing. So four weeks went by, and they wanted to meet Jim Jones, right? So I had set it up again for another meeting through Jim Pugh. And so they said they were going to go this time. Fairgrounds in Ukiah.
This was a fairgrounds in Ukiah.
Right.
Okay. What year was that?
20. I think it was 66.
Okay.
65, 66.
Mm-hmm.
Summer.
He didn't have a church.
No. He was only there 1 year. And so the time he arrived to settle down.
No one showed up again.
No, none of the members showed up again. I said to Edie, I said, "Damn it. You know, they let us down again." And Edie says, "I'm not going to go."
You said
I said,
"Go.
I cannot, cannot let Jim Pugh down a second time in a row. I mean, he's expecting us, and I think..."
You knew Jim Pugh a little bit then? Or?
Well, he worked for me.
He worked for you, I see.
See, I was foreman at that time.
I see.
And he worked for me.
I see.
So, I says, "I'm going to go whether you want to go or not." So, he decided to come along. So, we went to the meeting, and she was called out for the very first thing. She was, matter of fact, she was healed of cancer. I believe it was cancer. Mm-hmm. Of course, Jim didn't say that at first. He said it was a growth.
She got really she felt, she had a feeling that she knew she was healed of something.
And from that day, we just kept going.
Mm-hmm.
We went probably three meetings, three Sundays, and then we held back for a few, and then we went again for another one or two. Then we stopped going probably for about 2 months or 3 months. They were building the temple at that time in the valley. And they were holding their meetings in a garage, and we didn't go, and because we knew the dedication was coming on a certain day. It was in February, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So then we went to the dedication in February, and we continued from that time on. We went to every meeting after that. My life was the way I was living it, right? When I look back now, it was empty. The only thing that kept me going was because I love sports. My life was mostly all outdoors. And that was basically why I wanted to move to the valley. You know, it was outdoors and, you know, the American hero shit. I used to do a lot of hunting and fishing, too. Mm-hmm. You know, fall hunting fish. Mm-hmm. I used to take a boat and I used to go out to the Furlong Island for a week, Saturday, and get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to go fishing.
You lived in San Francisco?
Or you was in San Francisco.
In San Francisco.
All the time. And I played, like I said, I played baseball. That's what kept me going. I used to drink after work a lot, but I knew my capacity was the only thing that saved me. It was just one time that really messed me up. I didn't get in any accident or anything, but evidently I had more than I was supposed to have, and I drove all the way home and got into the door, sat down to have dinner, and I took one spoon of soup. We had soup that night. You know, quite a few steers. We raised chickens. We loved animals. I've raised peacocks. And we have dogs and cats. We've got them right now. I've raised horses, bred them. We belong to riding clubs, you know. Went on weekend rides, day rides, packs. I mean, those things, I enjoy it. That's welcome. I don't believe Edie liked them that well. Mm-hmm. She enjoyed the outdoors. But I don't think she cared for them really that well.
Mm-hmm.
The westerns, novels that were meaningless. Really, and I was one that just hated. I liked to read, but I couldn't get anything out of a book. I never read a book in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Never did. And she used to tell me all about what she read, and I used to get sick of listening to her Western novels, you know. And I told her one day, Ed, I said, you know, you do a lot of reading. I said, but all your reading is wasted. I said, why don't you get something that's going to benefit you? Something you enjoy reading.
Mm-hmm.
Right, first she started in reading ghosts and mm-hmm. true things that's supposed to have happened in life, you know.
I see.
And then it went from there, went into Edgar Casey.
I see.
And here it is.
Interesting how it all led to
everything.
Yeah.
We ought to try thinking about going to church once in a while.
Why'd you say that?
I don't know. I thought there was an emptiness there in this sense. I don't know why, but
an emptiness in your life?
Yeah. I've never had it. I had it when I was young. I used to get drugs to church and I hated it when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
But when I reached an age of 10 and 11, I was never forced anymore.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't go?
Done in my life.
But there was something that you felt that was missing in your life or lacking or...
Yeah,
was.
I thought there was something that we didn't have. We never had children, so I don't know if that was part of it or not. But
mm-hmm.
Basically, because what he said was right, and what he done was right.
Was
his character, you know,
character?
Yeah, the love he showed to all people. He wasn't a person that done things for himself. He done it for people. And at first, you know, when we went there, the metaphysics took to us, because this is what we came in. This is how we came in. I can't deny that. But it's metaphysics.
Yeah.
And his healing.
You believe that the healing is, you know, you didn't have any problem with it?
Yeah, I didn't have any problems with it because, through Casey, it kind of helped us along. Without Casey, I don't know what it would have done.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of a step before we reached it. When someone's touched, I mean, you can see it in their face. I mean, it's helped the person. You you can tell through a person's expression.
And that's what you saw in the people around you, or the church, or
oh, yeah.
That's how you felt. Okay.
You felt children being helped, too, you know,
just all very real.
Mm-hmm. Even not only in service, out of service, he was humanitarian throughout. I mean, always, if there was somebody in need, he was there. You know.
Do you remember things that happened in Redwood Valley in those years that particularly remember?
There was so many things. Many things stick in my mind, but this one particular case was one of the, probably our, matter of fact, it was the second or third meeting in the valley, Sunday meeting in the valley, when they had a Macedonian Baptist church up there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he came up to this sister that had an infant in her arms, and Jim put his hand on the infant's forehead, and he said, "Can I hold this child?" And the mother gave it to Jim, and he opened his mouth with his finger, and it kept going down his throat, and the baby was gagging. And the mother grabbed the baby and says, "What are you doing?" And before she could take it completely away, Jim pulled out a growth and had it on the end of his finger. And it says, "This child had a cancer." So I just removed it from its throat.
And
that happened. Yeah, it really made an impression.
Mm-hmm.
And, of what took place, she broke down crying.
She did.
Oh yeah, but just numerous things of that type, just all the time. At one time in the valley, and he told me things about something I didn't know about. When he called me out, he was saying these things to him. You know, somebody's got a relative in Africa, and I didn't put it together. You know, I guess it's me. So he said a few things, and it was me, because he'll say a few things to give you your confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And evidently, my relative that was in Africa was in some kind of difficulty, because he said that he was going to protect my relative, and came here 14 months ago, and I was, at that time there was nothing here, no cottages, no, the apartment buildings were just being finished, just being completed. Matter of fact, they were not completed, just the ones that we lived in were completed.
What did you think of it when you came?
I loved it because I loved the outdoors. I was sorry I didn't come 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
When it was nothing, when we had to really get in. And
what kind of things did you do when you came here?
Okay, I started in construction when I first came. And this was in April, the last part of April.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I worked in construction for 2 months. Building the cottages, and we were averaging 1.5 cottage a day. We had assembly line set up. And there wasn't many of us here then. It was probably 80 people that time. And we got into, we were building 1.5 cottages a day with our assembly line. And putting up all these other buildings, the doctor's office, this building we're in now, I helped build it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the brothers that were here wanted to get in construction. He was taking care of the bananas plantation at that time. So they couldn't leave that go, so they asked me if I would mind taking care of the bananas.
You know nothing about them.
Nothing. All I knew about how good they taste and I ate. So I said, yeah, I'll I don't mind, I'll try it. They said, well, try it, you know, we can always fit you and stuff like so. Lots of bananas. They showed me a lot of things about the herbs, teas in the bush. I've learned many things from that. But the only setback was they got laid off. After all our people started coming, they got laid off.
Because it's growing the bananas. How do you like it?
Oh, I think it's all right. Just so we're mixing everything together. Spread out. See, bananas are spread out so far. It's spread out from the front gate clear to the back field, all corners. And it's not located in a field, you know, one or two fields.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to take care of the way you want to take care of it. We're eating the banana boat quite a bit on our bananas, you know. So everybody calls me the authority on bananas. They call me Danny Bananas.
What did you change your name to?
My name is, what my original name was when I grew up at home. It's the Mostenis Kukulas. In the days of McCarthy,
yeah,
I lived also for that era.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I was a
revisionist? No, I went along with the crowd.
You know, what they done with people I worked with done, they're okay with me, you know.
Yeah.
Typical American.
You were a typical American.
Yeah. Drank with them, partied with them. Mm-hmm. What they talked about, I talked about. And communist was down at that time.
Yeah.
You know, if you were red, you're communist. If you even spoke anything about helping somebody, you know, watch out.
Helping anybody?
Oh, I don't know. It seemed to have caught on that way, you know.
Yeah.
Don't get caught up in that. So I got the, you know, communist. I don't want to be a communist.
Yeah.
You know, I'm red, not me.
Yeah.
So I went along with the crowd. And he used to sail on Onassis ship.
This Greek painter?
Greek painter who worked for me.
Okay.
And he was pretty well traveled. Mm-hmm. And he visited Russia. His ship went into Russia.
Yeah.
And before they left the ship, in this country, he said, you do not repeat it to anyone else or it will go bad for you.
He said, do not repeat what you see in Russia.
Yeah.
Why do you think, why did
that was that? Back, that was then. That was probably during the war.
Why did they tell that to them?
It was a better way of life.
It was just too nice.
Yeah.
He told you that. When he explained you that. Yeah.
You know, he was religious too, in a sense. I mean, of course, they never went to church on Sunday because the Ukiah never had an Orthodox church at that time.
Yeah.
Jim Jones was in the valley at that time.
Before you met Jim Jones, What did he tell you about Russia? What did he say?
Well, he asked me, he says, what is the communist?
You didn't know.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a life. What is it? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I knew some basic, you know, they all equal and they, you know, they all live in a crowded house. What you hear, you know.
Right.
You're ignorant of the fact you don't know shit and you need something.
Right. He liked it and said it was a nice country. Right. You remember that too.
He stayed there and his ship was in Portland, I think, for a week or 2 weeks. Great. I think it's got a, we have a chance to live it as a commune as we want it as a family structure as we want it without any outside interference. When we tried it in the States, there was always two facets, two elements. One, you try to live one part of the day, and the other part of the day, the other side was pulling in and corrupting. Right.
What did you?
And devoting my life to it, and trying to. I was living as Jim Jones was saying, because this is the way I wanted it, right?
When you went to work, yeah.
You were living with people, you were working with people that were not of the temple, were not getting the teaching, were living a life of TVs, sports, the life I came from. Mm-hmm. And there was no meaning in their life at all. I felt there was no meaning in life. Where my structure now was helping people.
And that was what gave you a meaning.
And there was a meaning in life.
Uh-huh. It made it difficult for you to live with these people who were living a meaningless life and really relate to them.
Yeah, because, I mean, their life was just party, drink, you know, and sports. Where I came from.
Yeah.
And I found out that through Jim's guidance and help, that, you know, it's more gratifying, more rewarding. It seems more rewarding to see a child smile because you're helping them. You got some food to sell here, or you're giving them some clothes, or you're helping an organization that's going to do some good. Beginning to go down under, or any, I don't care what you say, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the church has helped thousands, I mean, thousands upon thousands of people, and to know that you're part of it, mm-hmm. you know, and Jim Jones, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I know I would have never done it without him.
Mm-hmm.
I have enough structure at that point to do it. Yep, my dad did, but it never followed his footsteps. But my dad's help was basically family
owned.
That's true. Like, within cousins and things.
Right.
Yeah, they needed help, he would help them.
Right.
I remember back in 34, 36, something like that, there was an epidemic of flu in San Francisco. That was probably worldwide. That's the one they called worldwide.
Yeah.
They were going out with masks.
Yeah.
I can remember seeing some of that. My dad would go out to families' homes and cook their dinner, make sure they had something to eat, because the whole family was down.
So he had a lot of conscience there.
Yeah, they wouldn't let me go out of the house. So.
Mm-hmm.
But he, since I've answered it and come into the organization, into this family structure, teaching me communism and showing me the other side, what capitalism is like and how wrong it is and what it's doing to people throughout the world. Teaching me everything just stuff to say.
Right.
I didn't want it. Mm-hmm. But just being in the car locked up, you got it.
Yeah.
And a few of those, I can remember, go back now, that cafe, and this was at the San Francisco Boys Club. I set it up with the manager and everything. We made tables, we made little candle stands with a candle in it.
Mm-hmm.
We got these printed cloths that were from the neighborhood women, you know, they made them for us. And we had a lot of records, and we had live entertainment, and we publicized it for about a week. And we had the biggest blast in the papers and magazines you ever wanted to see. We had, we had well over 300 people the first night, pulling all these people into the Boys Club, right, for a dance and soft drinks. Music. Lights down low, you know. and then entertainment too. Joining the magazines, even went to two service people in South Pacific because I got word of that too. And he's that thing, I don't know.
Yeah, your friends got involved in whatever.
Got involved somewhere or another or something.
Yeah.
I won't say all, every one of them. But that was a big, that was the majority of it that did.
Testing 1, 2, 3.
We don't have anything. I got no options. Stop my home. That would be bad for you, no matter what happens. The last painful experience of Debbie Blakey, I died at 13, literally, one way. Before that time, I had not expected to be lost. Everybody wanted to be. I had only known that I would be needed as long as I could be needed. That people would want me around. But I actually thought that people could see my goodness. And I'd fill up the line every time one person is about to be taken away to the state with me. Just the army circus, to the cross circus, to the death, you know, that I was on my way, being sprayed by police. You know, so I found out. The number of people who were arrested, I never let one of my people go. Never once. I thought at least that goodness could be seen, but I was awful good. People like Debbie, they're essentially manifestors around here, officers, statues, all the time. But I gave up on that. But I was alive May 13th, but I didn't know how to communicate goodness. I thought, what's the point? You can't see the goodness of Jim Jones, how can you do it? Then I heard you through that morass and realized one thing. It's important to be a communist. And I will be one of 3 billion people on this planet denounced, rejected, and betrayed. If all of you that believe these sentiments, at least one person has been true to the only saying that lifts the human race above the animal people style. I don't doubt that some of you have come to communism or see great growth in our children and in leadership. That's what Debbie did for me. Now, I like that term, you belong, but you have to be constantly make sure that someone special cares for you. You talk, to people, you're so narcissistic, you don't even realize that people are being lied. They actually report you. You form up all kinds of games. I don't believe anything is a promise. And I will be a promise. Nobody loves me, and nobody needs me. That means that nobody needs me, to get my body, and I'm going to die, and it's not the order for the trial, communism. I'll be a communist if nobody ever can see my business. How would you try to get the kind of knowledge that brought me out of an insecure environment? My dad was trying to kill me, yet I managed to be that stable and rock. No matter what you do for me, I'll be true to you. I'll be true to family. If you see me as a person, it will give you a power. If you didn't realize that that power was not trusted in Jim Jones, he used it to work himself untiringly, to give himself compassionately, to meet the needs of all the people. But then someone said, you got to realize that authority, then you saw how much pain I had to go true because I use power to represent the people. I really was the dictator of the people, the proletariat, dictating under their will, becoming their will, suffering to fulfill their will. Whatever really caused it, I can remember how Debbie and he used to cause rapes of murder, other words, prison, murder, stolen it, Debbie and me. So blind with passion and rage at times, she suggested the murder of people on the spot, on the spur of the moment. So I did not believe in murder. I've never committed murder. People like that went out because they couldn't see giving their lives. They couldn't see becoming representatives of the people. They're in search for power. And when they're outside, they found no way to express their love for power. Nobody wants to have the communists. They know their suspect, and they miss some of the benefits of structure, the father, the protectiveness, the protectiveness. That's why they are on this rage night and day. They're preoccupied with us night and day. Because one side of them wants to get out, when they couldn't find happiness, they became criminally insane with a rage to destroy the thing that brought life to them and still caused them some guilt. They had to turn their guilt to excuses to destroy. But as long as we live, they will be changed. A part of it may be a very little seed to be changed by their criminal actions. Criticism of Congress made by President Carter for restricting foreign aid. Congress has restricted foreign aid. President Warren Carter criticized the Congress and decided to apply for war.